1, 2, 3, 4, Medium Talk.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Medium Talk on the Blackout Tips Premium Podcast Network. Today is, you know, I always go out, reach out to interesting people, people I want to talk to, from all different courses of life. And today is a very special day. I'm pretty sure in the history of the series, this is our first white male person on the show, from Medium Talk.
Some much needed color on the show.
So we're going to mix it up a little bit today. I first heard of this man actually through a podcast called Ratchet and the Geek, which co-stars Lovey, who of Twitter fame, so famous, only has to go by one name. You guys already know who I'm talking about. So I was listening to them because they recap Scandal. And that was pretty much all it took to get me to listen to that show. I was like, oh, here's some Scandal talk every week. But I guess, you know, we're talking about two very busy people. So the show wasn't coming out for a while. And I realized I followed this man on Twitter. So I said, Scott Hanselman, where is the show? And when am I going to get my recaps? And he said, don't you have a podcast? And I said, God damn it, he's right. I do have a podcast. So I actually invited him on, man, to interview him and talk some Scandal. So it's Scott Hanselman. You can find him at Hanselman.com. You can find him on Twitter. It's S. Hanselman, right?
Yep. Well, actually, you said that how Lovey can be referred to by just one name.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that you can just Google for Scott?
Just the name Scott?
Oh, yes.
And you, no way,
you Google,
man.
Do it right now. I'll wait. Check it out. He's opening up a browser.
This
check
is the stuff.
Googling for Scott.
This is the stuff that I learned.
On the Blackout Tips Radio.
This is stuff that I learned from listening to
you
guys.
Did you find it? It's me and Scott Toilet Paper.
Yeah, man. Scott Brand. And then, well, actually, Scott Mechklowicz is second now on mine.
Oh, we got to figure out who that is and get him out of there.
And the next two are you, by the way. So
see, it's the Scott Toilet Paper people that are a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then some dude on IMDb I don't care about.
This is why I exclusively use Charmin with Aloe.
Yeah, exactly.
to try to help Scott out. But yeah, Scott Hanselman, man. A man who's been podcasting for like 5 years, blogging for like 10 years, coding for like 20 years.
So you're saying I'm old is what you're saying.
I was I prefer seasoned and experienced.
I like season. I will accept season for 200.
Well, Scott, man, thanks for doing the show, first of all.
No worries. Yeah, people can check me out. Google for Scott. I got 3 podcasts. Hopefully we'll get Lovey back. She's been just doing a lot of work, been on the road. I mean, I think Ratchet and the Geek was a fun show. We did like 16, 17 episodes. I'm ready to do it again. I think one show that people who are listening might be interested in that I've got is called This Developer's Life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a ripoff of This American Life. It's such a ripoff that Ira Glass called us and said, you need to stop. That is true. The lawyers actually came out and, but they listened to the show and they said it was all right. So they let us keep the name.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. It's a good show. It's basically, if you ever listen to like NPR, it's just like that. But, we do, stories about programmers and computer people and how they deal with stuff. So. Well, definitely check it out.
I had an idea and I'm really glad I didn't run with it now that I've heard this story. It was called This African American Life and I was just going to do a podcast that was just about black shit but like really NPR style, you know.
See, that it's the ideas that we don't actually do that are the best ideas. See.
Well, I don't want to get
black
sued.
Shit radio. I would listen to that.
I'm scared to get sued though. If Ira Glass or his lawyers wanted to talk to me about This African American Life, which was going to be about typically black stuff, so it would be you know, maybe an expose on Crown Royal bags and like why what kind of stuff people keep in them, because that is like
right.
a black cultural thing, and then some lawyers show up like, don't do this shit anymore. I probably would have just stopped doing it.
And who are your sponsors for this?
You know, I don't know, but I feel like I could find some stereotypical sponsors, like maybe
this
reach
episode
out.
Of This African American Life is brought to you by Newport's.
Yeah, by menthol cigarettes. Yeah, I would definitely reach out to some stereotypical stuff. Although that might bring down the brand of American Life.
I think that would be that might dilute your brand.
Yeah, I could imagine a hate mail already.
Yeah, I don't think you need grape drink. Your sponsor on. See, We should have done that though. See, I had the idea for a YouTube channel that where basically it's like a white guy does your hair. So I was gonna call it Hanselman's Bump and Curls, and it would be like one white man, two strand twist. I couldn't quite figure out how to put it together, but there was something there. But then someone said we are not post-racial enough to make that happen. Maybe two black presidents from now, then it's okay for me to have a YouTube channel where I do hair.
Yeah, yeah.
But for now, I'm just going to have to take my wife's braids out. That's basically.
Yeah, I was prepared for black people being upset about this African-American life, but not the full power of NPR's lawyer staff. Like,
no,
I'm okay.
We can't have that.
Yeah, no, it's not that funny. But, so, Scott, man, first of all, you know, I was checking out some stuff on your site, man, and I wanted to actually ask you some questions before we even talked about Scandal. I want to save the best for last. So first things first, man, you've been like coding for 20 years.
Yeah, something like that. 2025.
When'd you get into that? Like what age were you when you let's, you know, I want to do this.
I was born a poor black child. And, when I was about 12 and I was getting in trouble, I was in AV club and that meant I threaded the projector. Mm-hmm. That's how old I am. Like when it was time to watch Roots, I just had to thread the projector. That was my job. So, I was getting into trouble, and this was back when teachers cared and superintendents cared. So they pulled everyone aside. They're like, this child is going to become a gangster if we do not deal with this child. I was voted most likely to be convicted of a white collar crime.
Wow.
And, so my dad sold our van and bought a Commodore 64.
Wow.
Like literally one day I went to school, there was a van. I came home, we had no car. And he's like, look, I went to Sears. And it was a little brown Commodore 64 with a little 13-inch monitor. And he's like, they said you need to be on computers. So they kept me in the house. And then we got out of that neighborhood.
How did your mom react to your dad selling the van for a computer? Because I feel like at that point in time, that's pretty edgy purchase, right?
Yeah, that was a pretty controversial situation. This was one of those working 2-3 jobs kind of situations. Mm. My dad was a fireman. My mom was a zookeeper. And my dad would drive the oil truck. This is back in the day. We'd have like heating oil would go from like house to house. So he would drive. He would be a fireman. And then he'd ride the heating oil truck at night. My mom worked at the zoo. And, you know, it was not a very financially solvent time.
Wow. Well, that's still forward thinking of them, though, to, like, get a computer. My father's a computer programmer. So we've always had computers in our house, like, from, like, TI-85s and stuff like that, like, old school stuff. But it was always, like, oh, the future box, you know? Like, I remember when the computer couldn't really do anything, and my dad, like, showed me the first, like, you can play football on the computer, and it was text, you know, like,
yeah.
Run to the left. Okay. That got you 3 yards. Run to the right.
Actually, I love that stuff. Like, I'm trying to get my kids into that, like Ultima and like Zork. Like, I showed my son and it was just a black screen with white text. Like, you're in a forest.
Yeah.
And my son's like, and I care why.
Right. He drops the keyboard and starts
type go left.
He drops.
Why do I need to type go left? Where's the controller?
He drops the keyboard and starts moving, trying to do like connect stuff with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's like computer.
Right. yeah, man. So that like, and it's funny too because so many people that code get into it that early. Like, do you feel like you have to get into it that early, or do you think people can learn to code later in life?
You know, that's a tough one. So there's all these things like code academies and groups where you can like become a programmer in 6 weeks and things like that. And I've been doing it 20 years and I don't think you can, there's no shortcut. Like, I look at it like this. You can come over and teach me how to squat and bench and I could probably put a pound or two of muscle on in 6 to 8 weeks. And then I would know more than the other dude that has never squatted or benched. Does that make me a bodybuilder? No, it makes me a dude who knows how to squat and bench without hurting myself.
Right.
I think the same thing kind of applies from a code perspective. I think the point is, though, that like the public has no concept. Like, if you throw a rock and hit somebody, they probably, you're not even going to hit somebody who can write an Excel macro. That's how rare coding skills are. So let's all raise it up for everyone. And I think it's less about coding skills and it's more about thinking skills. Mm-hmm. Like, what's a for loop? Like, just get that. What's a while loop? What's a for loop? What's a function? If you get that level of understanding, there's a sense of empowerment. Like, oh, wait a second. I can plug that thing into that thing and write a little bit of script. You know what I mean? I'll give you an example. I was working with Lovey on – and she has a charity called the Red Pump Project. This is her AIDS organization for getting AIDS awareness for women and girls. And she says, I want to have a website that has a list of all the people who donated. Well, the people who donated are in her Google spreadsheet. So she's like, well, I got a Google spreadsheet and I've got this – and I want to get them updated. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, I'm a programmer. I'm probably figure this out. Turns out Google Spreadsheet has an API for each cell in this column. And I know what HTML is, and I write the HTML out, and then I put it on a schedule. So now once a day, this little tool logs into her spreadsheet, spins through all the people, writes out their names with a little HTML, and then FTPs that up to Lovey's server. Mm-hmm. From a non-programmer perspective, that's amazing.
Right.
I update this spreadsheet and my website magically gets a list of donors. But from a programmer perspective, that's just plugging yellow Legos into red Legos.
Right. Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Do you ever think like I guess maybe it sounds too controversial, but instead of like a second language, what if we taught coding in school for kids?
We should totally do that. But it's all about how you teach it. You know, let me give you another example. So when my wife's family is from South Africa and Zimbabwe, and they had visited, and I had my nieces and nephews in my kitchen, and they were jet lagged, and they were basically sitting around in their robes, and they're just like, oh, I'm dying, I'm jet lagged. And one of them said, he was like 13. He says, Uncle Scott, how come it's daytime here right now? And I'm tired. Now, there's a lot of ways to answer that question.
Right.
But how does a programmer answer that question? I was like, an opportunity to teach? And I grabbed an orange and I said, here, hold this. That's the sun. Here, hold this. Okay, this is take this apple. This is the earth. All right, so we're going to tilt the earth. And then I'm building a model of the solar system over our kitchen with the – and they're like, oh, Uncle Scott, just tell me the answer. Right? Like, right. They don't want a model of the solar system, but I mean – you got to understand that to answer the question correctly. Right. And in the process, we're going to learn about seasons and the tilt of the earth. I mean, like, teachers like that, in my opinion, can get people jazzed about stuff. So they asked a simple question about time zones. I could have blew them off. But no, we took fruit and we built a solar system model on our kitchen table. The same thing applies to programming. When someone says, well, teach me about computers, I mean, I can teach you how to click on stuff. Right. You can probably teach yourself how to click on stuff. But what I like to do is I make a text file. I type ABC, and I save the file like abc.txt. And then I look at the hex code, and it says, hey, you know, A is like ASCII 68, and B is 69. Why? Mm. Like, why? I say, okay, well, in the 1950s, there was a Smith Corona printer. Remember the typewriter with the ball? Mm-hmm. Describes the position of the thing on the ball, and I talk about ASCII and why printers work like that. And you remember, like, on an old typewriter, when you go, like, carriage return?
Yeah.
And then line feed, right? You go, ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding. Well, that's why carriage return means return the carriage from this position to that position. That is hitting enter. And then line feed is like that. Those codes live in a text file. You can open up TextEdit on your Mac right now, type something, hit enter, save it, look at the file, and the line feed is there. So think about that. Carriage return and line feed from a printer from 60 years ago is in your text file today. Teach that to the kids. That's the building blocks. And then work your way up to JPEGs and Photoshop and all that kind of stuff. It's about, like, you're going to teach someone how to be a plumber. You can teach them how to put pipes together, or you can talk about the history of plumbing and how it all worked. Why are we doing this?
Right. Exactly.
That's what we need to teach.
Like, what's
that was a long-ass answer, but that's my answer.
No, it happens on the show all the time. I get people that like to talk and explain, and hopefully the audience enjoys that too.
Sorry.
And most of
now they've all pushed stop at this point.
Nah, they've learned about aqueducts now. They're looking shit up, man. They're all about it. So I also saw that, like, I mean, well, also, since you learned so early, And I'm sure along the way up until now, you've met and come in contact with so many different people. Who are your like influences, like inspirations, like who got you on the path to like, I want to, you know, code some shit?
That's a good question.
And for the record, like I didn't mention it earlier, but you go out, you speak, you know, so there's a lot of stuff. I read your, I'm a phony. Blog
post. One of my most famous blog posts, it was called I'm a Phony. And basically I was just coming out and just saying, listen, you know, half of what I talk about is bullshit. And that, because everyone is like that, right? I'm not saying that I'm any more or less phony than anyone else. I think that people go to work in the morning and they just like, I'm just trying to get through the day. I want to make sure my boss doesn't find out that I don't really know 100% about what I'm doing. It's about the whole fake it till you make it kind of idea.
Yeah. You know what I think, too, though, is like it depends on the person, because I think for and especially like the career you pick, because I think certain jobs you oversell yourself. Like you almost
I'm not
have
a phony
to.
On the fry later. If I'm you want fries with that, I'm a phony. No, I'm not a phony.
Exactly.
I know how to fry.
Yeah, because I like when I had a, you know, a different job, like when I wasn't working doing this, I felt more like a phony, but now I'm like, no, I know what the fuck I'm talking about for in general. Like, you know, I know how we made this. I don't know every single thing, but, I'm competent enough to believe in myself for this. Now what about your influences, man? I gave you a little second to think about it. You got anybody that, comes to mind?
I can't think of, there's not like rock stars. There's no Beyonce of programming that I can think of. Like,
typical Bill Gates, not,
No, I mean, Bill Gates is cool, but I admire Bill Gates not because he was a programmer. He was a mediocre programmer. Mm-hmm. I admire him because he's a philanthropist.
Right.
I think that, the guys that worked on the Enigma machine in the early 20th century, and people like Alan Turing, T-U-R-I-N-G, these are people who like, if you look up Enigma, the Enigma machine, and the people that worked at in Britain to decode some of the things that were happening in World War One in the early 1920s, those people were like computer science people. And like Turing just got pardoned. Turing was an interesting guy. So check this out. He cracked the code that Germany was using to send back and forth, and he like effectively saved the world. But he was gay, and as such was persecuted and eventually killed himself.
Wow.
He killed himself because he was being persecuted for being gay in the 40s and 50s, right?
Was he in the military too, or was this just...
So he was a geek. He was a programmer, and he was kind of drafted to crack the code. Okay, he was a doctor, and he went to a place called Bletchley Park and was part of the Code Breakers. And they believe that his work, cracking the code that Germany used to talk to each other, shortened World War II by at least 2 years. Okay? That means that he saved thousands and thousands and thousands of lives.
Right.
And in 1941, these decryptions allowed people to listen in on the conversations that Germany was having. And but because he was gay, they totally, you know, bullied the heck out of him, and he basically killed himself.
Wow.
He was pardoned 3 days ago. 2013, okay, that has finally cleared his name. This man is the father of modern computing.
Wow.
And we pardoned him on Tuesday.
Wow. That's crazy.
So that's a hero. Like, look up Alan Turing, super interesting guy.
Pardoned by the United States? Like,
pardoned by the UK.
The UK? Okay. Wow.
Yeah, he was an Englishman, and basically it was a crime to be gay, and they castrated him.
Oh, my God.
He was chemically castrated in 1952. He was convicted of gross indecency.
Oh, my God.
That's crazy. So they did a royal – basically 3 days ago they had a royal pardon. And the way they treated him was just awful. But there's a thing. There's a term called Turing complete, T-U-R-I-N-G complete. And that's the test that you give to see whether or not computers are really, really computers. And this is something that people use every day, all day. So this guy was a freaking hero, and we treated him like crap.
Well, that's a good person to look up to, man.
Computer martyr. You ever watch Nova on PBS?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, I'll give you some links to put in the show notes. Nova is like the science show, and there's a whole thing about how the Enigma machine worked. And it's super, super interesting stuff. It's not geekery. It's like, this guy saved people in World War II as much as shooting a gun.
Wow. That's amazing.
For real.
All right, man. So you also got, I saw you had a couple books and you're working on a book with your wife.
Yeah, so this is the thing. We've been working on this book for a year and it's about 60% done. It's called Relationship Hacks. You can see it at relationshiphacks.com. And it's about navigating a mixed marriage. Mm-hmm. Now, my wife is black, but that's not what I mean. Mm-hmm. What I mean is geeks and normals. Because geeks and normal people deal with things in entirely different ways. And we take things really, really literally. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think that navigating that is a challenge. We've been married for 15 years. And I think that I understand how to talk to a programmer and how people can bypass a lot of trouble. Mm. Like, let me give you an example of a programmer problem. So, okay. A programmer's wife sends the programmer to a grocery store, gives him some instructions. Get a loaf of bread. If they have eggs, get a dozen. Mm-hmm. So the programmer comes home with a dozen loaves of bread and says they have eggs.
Like a true false equation.
I mean, I'm like, hey, you know, get a loaf of bread, they have eggs, a dozen. Here's a dozen loaves of bread. They had eggs.
I hope a lot of people don't run into this problem in relationships, but I hope it's not a common problem. But I know my father as a programmer is a geek, I would say, and my mom is a normal, I would say. And I pretty much learned all my relationship skills by being the moderator between the two of them. So,
yeah, exactly.
They definitely do speak two completely different languages. My father's very like factual, logic based the time.
They have a mixed marriage then. That's exactly right. Here's another one. Let me take one more. A programmer goes out with this girl. Next day, he tells his friend how the date went. So he says, "Oh man, we went out. It was raining. We got soaked. We went to her place. She started to undress. And then she threw the wet clothes on her computer." And his buddy's like, "Wow, what kind of computer?"
Yeah, right. What? You can't do that to a computer. So now, are you worried because, you know, the book is tentatively named Relationship Hacks. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of relationship hacks out there. I've been seeing them on Twitter, being hacky. I noticed, you know, on your Twitter account, I see very few tweets that start with like, ladies or give condescending advice.
No,
or...
I don't give condescending advice. That's a very good point. Like, I don't do tweets to start with girl. No, that's not how I tweet. You know, right, I'm a married man. I don't tweet like that.
Ladies, 12 loaves of bread.
Yes.
You know, I think that'll be cool, man. It's definitely a different perspective. You gotta
try to be practical. I mean, trying to be practical and communicate. We talk about like this is a book about password management. Like you're married. How are you gonna manage passwords? Mm-hmm. You know, if I die, who renews the domain name? This is important relationship advice.
Exactly.
Right? Who keeps the podcast running when I'm dead?
I know. I have to think about these things all the time, man. I just made my wife a 50% partner on this business venture or something. If I get sick, the show got to go on, man. Like, this is how we get paid. So she got
you have a digital will, right? Like, like when you die, who sends the passwords to the wife?
Yep.
Who lets her know how to get into the Chase account? This is important.
Exactly. All
it's
that
a digital
stuff.
Will.
So make sure you guys look that up too.
I got a post on that too on the blog.
On the blog, man. You also blog a lot, man. Like, you keep it pretty regular. Like, how do you, like, what is the secret to, cause I think a lot of people start blogs. A lot of people are very ambitious. And, you know, I'll talk to them. I'll be like, "Oh, you should come on the show." And I always go check their website. I always check their blog, see what they've been talking about. And it'll be like, August 2001, I had this thing. And you're like, okay.
Even worse, you show up on their blog homepage, August 2001. What's the last post? It's a post where they're like, "Yeah, I haven't been blogging a lot lately, but I'm rededicating myself to blogging. I'm back." Yeah. And this post marks the beginning of a new era in blogging. Last post.
So what's your secret, man? Do you write them out in advance? Do you keep, you know, have like a schedule? Like, you like can't not have something? What do you do?
I try to blog at least twice a week. Mm-hmm. Sometimes three would be a good week. If I have an idea, I blog it right away. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't have a good idea. I have a lot of people who you'll talk to bloggers and they'll say, yeah, I got about 6 blog posts going right now. That doesn't mean anything. That's like, yeah, I have about 30 domains I haven't turned into startups either, but I mean, that's just a monument to my own failure.
Right.
Like, if you have an idea, get that out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Start slapping the keyboard. There's a lot of people out there thinking about doing stuff, and that's fine. But while they're thinking about doing stuff, I'm doing stuff.
Right.
Get that shit done. Don't set up unreasonable expectations.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to run a marathon. I'm not going to run a half K. But I'll do my little 10,000 steps on my Fitbit.
Mm-hmm.
So think about your blog that way. If you go from never having blogged in your life and then set yourself up for, all right, I'm going to blog every single day, 750 words a day. No, you're not. No, you won't, because you're going to miss it one day and then you'll skip and then it'll be a fail.
Mm.
So reasonable expectations, work out 3 days a week, blog 3 days a week, call it successful. It's the same thing with my podcast. I've done 403 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Every single Thursday for the last 5 years.
Right.
It's not that good of a show. But I'm the last man standing. Therefore, it's a good show. You see what I'm saying? It's
mm-hmm.
like, I feel like it's like, I have the Grey's Anatomy of podcasts. Right? Like, we don't know why this show is still on. But other shows have fallen by the wayside and we still watch Grey's. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, yeah. You guys.
It's not Scandal, but they show up.
You won the marathon. And you still win the marathon every Thursday.
I'm gonna walk the marathon though.
Yes.
I'm not gonna try to sprint. I'm gonna hurt myself.
Right. Just slow and steady wins the race, as they say. I think also when it comes to stuff like that, I was talking to someone the other day and they were like, I wanna start a podcast, but I don't know if it's good enough yet. And I was like, that's not a good reason to not start a podcast, because it doesn't matter, even if you thought it was perfect today, there's no way in hell you'll think it's good a year from now. It's just the way things work. Even the things I thought were perfect 2 years ago, I was like, that was a great idea. I'm like, that shit, I don't want to see it anymore. I don't listen to my own shit. Like, I just skip over it and think about the next thing. So I feel like more people have to, you know, get out there and just start working.
Yeah. See, if I look at my blog from last year, it sucked. Now, at the time, I was at the top of my game.
Right. It was brilliant.
It was brilliant, right? You know, the only post that was any good was the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it's supposed to be. And the next one will be better.
Yeah, I agree.
Don't sweat the details. Don't sweat the details.
I'm already on the next one now. Like, right now, I'm thinking about the next. Like, you know what? Next show's going to be.
You're thinking about the next guest? Is that how you're going to treat me?
Yeah, that's how I do everything. I'm thinking about the next show I have to do at 2:30 now.
That's right. There's so many more interesting coming on in a minute. I'm gonna get through this Hanselman interview.
Right? It's a fucking disease, man. I don't appreciate enough. Like, I have to have, if I don't have holidays or these breaks, like, where I can go, hey, we're really doing it, man. And people are saying this is good. That was a good interview. No one's ever asked that guy that before, but while it's going right now, I'm thinking about like Tuesday. But, so, another thing too, man, I noticed you go out, you speak, and, you know, I've seen you know, like South by Southwest and
yeah.
Different, like, where all have you gone to speak to people and what do you speak about?
Well, at this point, I'll speak to anyone that'll listen to me, but, if you go to Hanselman.com/speaking, I got a list. I was in Australia a couple weeks ago. I'll be in Denmark a week after next, and then Germany, and then Canada. In New Zealand. So I do a lot of traveling, a lot of speaking. I'm not getting paid for it though. They pay for the travel, but they don't give me money for the talks.
Okay.
I usually talk about software and making websites, and I do cloud computing. I work on Azure, which is like Amazon, but it's for the Microsoft cloud.
Mm-hmm.
But I also talk about productivity, and I talk about personal branding, and I talk about startups. I was just in New York a couple months ago talking at a conference called Focus 100. It's actually a very interesting conference. It's done by Catherine Finney, and the goal is to have 100 black female run startups in tech.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've heard of this.
Yeah, yeah. So I spoke and I talked about getting your technology plan, your technical plan handled. So I'll talk about all sorts of stuff. But ultimately, I realized that it's not that I'm a speaker, because if you say that you're a speaker, that's kind of a that's kind of a douchey thing to say.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's like putting visionary in your Twitter profile. Like,
right.
Who is that guy? You know what I mean? If you put thought leader in your Twitter profile, you're an asshole.
Yeah, I actually had a running joke where I was calling myself thought leader for several weeks, and it's quite fun because I knew it was douchey as hell. Like, who would possibly do that?
Yeah, exactly. It's deeply douchey. But so I realized that I'm not any of those things. Mm. What I am is a teacher. Mm. I'm just like I'm a high school teacher, and I've just never taught high school.
Well, if you're not getting paid, that pretty much puts you in the same category as a high school teacher. So
yeah, pretty much.
That pretty much makes sense. How does that work that you do not get paid for this? Is this a personal choice? Is this like, this is my charity? This is what I want to give back to them?
Yeah. Okay. So that implies that I don't want to get paid.
Yeah. Yeah. How does that work?
You feel free to pay me.
Okay.
I'll be fine.
Okay.
No. All right. No, we don't get paid because most of these conferences don't have any damn money. Mm. Most software conferences, people don't realize this. Most software conferences are actually kind of a labor of love that is organized by some nonprofit. They're almost all a nonprofit. So what someone has to do is they create a, what do you call it, a 501c3 or whatever, mm-hmm. right? And they go and create a nonprofit organization. They wrap the conference around it. And then they get sponsors to pay for the food and to fly in the speakers. So, you know, I'm going to go speak in New Zealand. It's going to cost $2,000 just to fly my ass over there.
Right.
How are they going to pay me, right? They pay $2,000 to get me there.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically do it out of the love of software and being interested in software. And we do it because we want to get the word out. So I'll take vacation from work and I'll go give a talk. If I'm talking about something that my boss wants me to talk about, then I could get maybe him to pay for it, but I still can't get paid.
Right.
I just wouldn't have to take vacation. The only times I give presentations and get paid for it would be if I gave a talk once at a university for their faculty dinner. Like, I was the entertainment for the faculty dinner. That's a gig, and I get paid for a gig.
Now, is it also just that, because I feel like there's other people that probably could do this, but you know, you like, so there has to be something in you that wants to do this. Is it fun or fulfilling for you? Because it seems like, you know, a lot of hassle for free. So it has to be something you're getting out of it.
When you're a teacher and you're talking, you've probably done this. You've probably gone to like a kid's school or like, you know, bring your dad to work day or something like that, where you presented in front of a bunch of children. And when you present in front of kids, you end up looking at their blank faces, looking for anyone to have a recognition of. Like, do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Oh, he just lit up. That okay.
Right.
Screw you guys. That dude gets what I'm talking about. And then you focus on that kid.
Mm.
Because the other 30 of them will never amount to anything. But that child understands what I'm talking about.
Right.
Right? And then you're like, okay, well, I got through to that one kid.
Right.
Same kind of thing, right? So you go and you talk, and maybe it's 100 people, maybe it's 1,000. But you look around at a bunch of blank faces and a bunch of people who don't care. And then one of them lights up, or they start nodding, not nodding off, but actually nodding.
Yeah, like, oh, I get
it. And you're like, I get it. And then you say, okay, I helped that person.
Right.
And then they come up afterwards and they say, man, I can go back to my office right now and use that tip you gave me or this idea that you made me think about today.
Mm.
And then you go, all right, that made the trip.
Yeah, the problem I always had in school with like programming teachers in general, because I went to school. Not my first inclination was like, yeah, I think I'll do something with computers. Maybe I'll do some programming. I think I could do that. My father's a programmer. Blah blah blah. And the first programming class I took, I went to the teacher for like extra instruction because I just wasn't getting some of the words or some of the language. And I sat down with him, and he just took my program and fixed it and gave it back to me. And I was like, yeah, but how did you know to, like, do that? Like, what did you look at when you said, this is wrong, so that I'll know what to do next time? And he was just like, well, I already fixed it. And I was like, I don't think I can do this, you know, this way. Like, I have to completely teach myself. And then when we did labs, the other students in my class were just copying the senior student shit. And I was like, I was like, that can't, Like, you guys, we're gonna have to take more classes than this. So they'll find out that you don't know what the fuck you're doing at some point, and now those people are computer scientists. So I completely blew the wrong call at the time and changed my major. But yeah, but I do think that having that connection with people that really do want to teach you something, it does, like, it can make a world of difference if you find those kind of people that are teaching it. So
yeah, I think that there are people though that think a certain way that are supposed to be programmers, like they came wired that way. And if computers didn't exist, like if you're the caveman programmer, you'd probably come up with something that would be programming related. You'd be like the Flintstones guy that would like build the water, the water system or whatever. You know what I mean? There's always some dude in the Flintstones. He's always a real skinny guy that, computers don't exist. So I'll be back here in the cave with the ladies. Setting up a cooking system. Right.
Another thing I wanted to ask too, man, like, where is the coolest place you've gone to talk?
The coolest place?
Yeah.
It was both the coolest and the not coolest at the same time.
Okay, cool. That's going to answer my next question too.
There you go. So in 8 days once, I went to Egypt, Dubai, and Germany. Boom, boom, boom. And I actually have a video online. If you search for "if this is Tuesday, this must be Cairo." And I have a video montage that I put together of this. If this is Tuesday, this must be Cairo. And basically I did a video of it to show the glamorous life of the technical speaker, which is exactly not glamorous. I mean, you know. Hey, you want to go see the Sphinx? No, man. I mean, I'm completely fried. I got to go to Dubai tomorrow. I'm at the Holiday Inn, Cairo. No, man. Let's go to see the Sphinx. All right, whatever. We go to see the Sphinx. We go to the Camel. We get over the Sphinx. And they're like, there it is. Where? I can't see it. No, it's behind that. Behind what? It's behind the Domino's Pizza. True story. I climbed to the third floor of the Domino's Pizza in Cairo to see the Sphinx, because there's a Domino's right there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? So it's just like, and your kids aren't there and your wife's not there. So it's like, no, you know, it's not glamorous. It's not glamorous at all.
That's kind of crazy though, because like you said, it's also the coolest place too.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know? Like, you know, it's like very Indiana Jones. But it's not like you think it's going to be in your brain. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that does kind of suck. When you give talks like at the the Focus 100 and stuff like that, do you ever walk in the room and feel like these people think I'm the enemy? Because you're also like, you know, you are the man when you walk in the room as far as the white man. And that's
when I speak at black conferences.
Yeah, because it's kind of an uphill battle, I think, sometimes where I was talking to my dad, and it was when I was younger and stuff. I didn't know as much shit, and I remember talking to him. I was like, well, you know, man, this white dude came up. He just thought he fucking knew everything. He starts talking to me. My dad's like, you can learn a lot from white people. Don't just be so dismissive. But, you know, out of that type of emotion, and you know, especially when your cause is kind of like, we want to develop something, you know,
you kind of
need people that, you know, are willing to at least spread or share knowledge that may have gained some, or even if it's something little, you know. So like, is it ever tension, or is it just pretty much, it's Scott, we know him, and let's get this thing going?
If one as a white person rolls deep into some kind of a location and starts to like bring the knowledge, that's always a bad idea, right? Regardless of color. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Regardless of color or gender, because I got a couple things going for me, right? I mean, let's just be real here, right? I'm older,
right?
Which means I'm smarter than any 20-year-old that's out there.
Right.
Because I'm old. I get to be old and smart.
Seasoned, I believe.
Seasoned. Thank you, sir. I am white. Mm-hmm. I'm male. Mm-hmm. I'm rich. Mm-hmm. I'm not like Louis C.K. rich.
But
you
rich
know, I'm not the 1%. I'm probably the 5%, though.
Ain't a bad place to be, Scott.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm doing all right. I mean... You know what I mean? I'm the 5%.
If you guys can see the video, Scott is making it rain in the studio right now. So,
but so if you consider those things, you know, I have a house, I have a car, you know, I'm doing all right. I'm not living on, I'm not living in a trailer.
Right.
That means that arguably I'm playing the game on the easiest difficulty setting.
Mm-hmm.
So I spoke to a board recently, of a number of elderly black men who were, interested in social justice, and I was helping them with their technology. And I came in just like that. I said, gentlemen, I don't mean in any way to imply that I'm playing this game on anything other than the easiest difficulty setting.
Right.
And I deeply respect the fact that you guys are playing some on medium, some on hard,
right,
and some on hardcore.
Right. Right.
But if I can do something to help make it easier for you all to play the game, then I'm here to help.
Yeah.
But if you roll in like, yeah, I mean, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. Why didn't you pull yourself up by yours?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey, man, his boots were heavier.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to respect that as a white person. So once you respect that white privilege exists, then you have these conversations.
Yeah.
And it's a little more real, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense, man. I do feel like white people who are historically aware are kind of like cool Cowboys fans where – you know, you can't help that you're on a you're a Cowboys fan necessarily. But, you know, you can be cool about it. You don't have to bring up all them old championships and shit, man. I just want to eat Thanksgiving turkey and have a good time with the rest of the family, Uncle Randy.
yeah, but, I mean, it doesn't have to be a whole thing, but yeah.
Yeah, but that's cool though, you know, that you do that. Now also, you do have, you know, African, you know, American, or African wife actually, Mo. So you can pull that card, you know.
You know, but see, nobody needs, this is the other thing, nobody needs the white guy to pull out the black wife card. You know what I mean?
So because, you've never been in a situation that bad yet then?
What do you mean? Like, I gotta pull the black wife card?
Yeah, man. I feel like that's the big joker. You play spades?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't slap the table and then stand up.
I got a black wife, I'm out! No, I'm just
black wife, son.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
No, I mean,
these are my babies, kissing your kids, yes, and shit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I keep actually. You know what I do? I keep a picture of my kids just taped on the back of the spade, so that I just
hey,
slap it down.
That's why I fuck with De Blasio, and I'm not even from New York, dog. I was just like, this dude got to be cooler than what they got.
Yeah, if I was New York, I'd be like, that's pretty cool. I'll vote for him.
I mean, I don't even know what that dude's fucking policies are.
They're going to do something crazy. It's going to be awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know any of that dude's political stances. He got voted in, and then I was like, is he for or against stop and frisk?
No, everybody's that's like, brilliant. His wife is a former lesbian.
Yep.
His son has a great, a little bit dry, but still a great
afro. Mm-hmm.
Daughter was like a former addict or some kind, or depression or something. I mean, he's got it all. You know
I think his that's wife diverse. Used to be like a Black Panther too. Like that dude's a beast, man.
That's funny is that we know everything about everyone except him.
Yeah, he could have been in the KKK. It doesn't even matter. Like, everybody's just like, he's probably cool.
But see, what's cool about it is that because he's so incredibly white that we just apply whatever flavor we want to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the,
you know what I mean?
That's the secret.
He's just kind of like, he's like tofu, right? He just takes on the flavor of whatever spice is around him. So.
Yeah, that's the secret, man. If you showed up to those conferences talking like the scene in Anchorman 2, I don't know if you've seen it yet.
Yeah.
Everybody would be like, man, what the fuck? Get this guy out of here. But, you know, showing up and just being cool, everybody's like, oh, I like this dude, man.
Know what'll happen, though, is there's going to be some scandal where we'll end up finding like some dramatic video of De Blasio doing the wobble. And it's going to be completely inappropriate and difficult to look at, and we're like, oh man, we did not need to see that, and it's going to be like his Howard Dean moment, and then it's over for De Blasio. Like, that white man cannot wobble.
They just gotta release the secret of him doing the electric slide at his own wedding footage, and everything will be forgiven.
Do we know this footage exists?
It has to, right? I mean, it's black people at a wedding. They did some electric sliding. I don't care
that is true,
who
though.
You are.
That is true.
We gonna get that slide in.
Yeah, there's him at an all white party stepping in the name of love or something, and we need to find that footage.
Yeah.
Get on it.
Get in front of it, destroy it. Speaking of which.
Is that De Blasio right there?
You know who can help him with that.
Who's that?
Olivia Pope, speaking of scandal.
Oh, nice segue. That was handled.
This is what I do, man.
That was smooth.
I handle it. man. So this is what I want to talk to you about, because I mean, I'm sure people have been riveted about all this tech speak and conferences and racial ambiguity. But what I want to talk about is the first half of this season of Scandal, because I have not got to hear any of your thoughts on it. Since, you know, I haven't heard, you know, the show hasn't been coming out, Ratchet and the Geek. Make sure you guys keep it on your feed just in case it returns. But I wanted to know what you think, man. So I guess I'll just try to like hit the major points.
What's the rules here? What's the rules? Do people expect that there's going to be spoilers or what?
Oh yeah. We can spoil anything. Yeah.
Okay. If you have not assumed that at this point in the show, you have watched Scandal.
If you have not watched up to the fall finale of Scandal 2013, turn the damn show. What were you thinking? Well, I could have spoiled it by now. You guys know how I do. I should have been spoiled it. This is the nicest I've ever been about spoilers. Get out of here. All right, they're gone, Scott.
Oh, hang on.
All right, yeah, no problem.
Sorry.
No problem.
We'll edit that out.
Yeah.
I'll give you a spike so you can see it on your editor.
Oh, I got it.
All right, yeah. That's what I usually do. Make a big loud noise so then I can edit that shit out.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that.
Nah, no problem, man.
Scandal, man. Huck is the story. That's the story, I think. There's a lot of different things going on in Scandal right now, but from my perspective, Huck completely went there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we're watching network television and he's pulling his friend's teeth out of her damn head
and licking the side of her face, which somehow more gross than pulling teeth out of someone's head.
No.
I don't know why in the trailer they show him with pliers going into her mouth and I'm like, oh my god, but then the next thing is they show him licking her face and I'm like, oh, that's worse. Like, what's wrong with you?
I don't know. I didn't think that was that worse. Maybe that's another racial line right there.
I don't know, like, man. Don't lick my
it
face.
It was the teeth that I had a problem with. I'm not okay with that at all.
That, I mean, like, it's obviously more painful and intrusive. But I don't know, man.
Deeply intrusive. I'm not okay with that. This is her damn teeth. When I'm watching, someone's always getting their teeth pulled out on TV or the movies, and I'm always looking at that thinking, how did they not hurt the dude's actual teeth?
Oh, in the scene.
You ever think about that? Like,
that
actor got that real close to their damn teeth. You know, how did they do that?
That's why actors are better than us, but,
that's true.
The other thing, though, too, is I think what creeps me out is, like, the intimacy of licking my face is somehow more of a psychological, violation because I know you're crazy as fuck. Whereas if you just rip my teeth out, there could be a purpose to rip my teeth out for torture, and at some point that might stop. You licking my face means you going off the deep end. Something's wrong with you, man. And I was very upset by Huck doing that. Like, he's lost it.
That's like those Saturday Night Lives where, like, you know, they're like, the dudes are kissing or they're all licking on each other, and it's just like, I don't know you like that. Like, we work together, but, like, I didn't. Like, someone had to write that. Like, we had to really dig into the psychology of it. Someone wrote that information. They did a table read.
Yep.
They did a table read.
This is why I lick your face.
At this point, you'll be licking his face. Oh, well, back up.
Why
am I licking his face? Oh, it's part of the character. It moves the plot forward. No, it does not move the plot forward.
Yeah, I feel like that's how I think about stuff is like at the writer's table. I just, like, whenever, like, that decision was made. Conversely, the actor puts it in there as like, you know, hey, I'm gonna ad-lib this. Go with me. I'm gonna do something.
How are you gonna ad-lib licking the face? And see, this is the other thing. People are supposed to then go with that. You know,
right?
I mean? Like, if you're a good what's the word? If you're a good improv person, you just keep going with it. Like, you never see anyone do a side eye, right?
Yeah.
In the middle of that,
you have to yes and that. But the thing is, though, if someone's licking your face, impossible not to go with it. It's impossible because your reaction will be that of someone who does not want their face licked. I feel like that's...
Why can't you just be like, what the fuck are you doing to my face?
I feel like that's a one-take thing. Like, they don't even need to
that's pretty much a one-take thing. Can I get a moist towelette?
Yeah.
Can you just do that one more time, please?
I'm going to need some sanitizer and him off of the set for 5 minutes.
I'm going to have to Purell my whole head.
Yeah, well, Huck went from a guy who occasionally took a sip of whiskey, i.e. torture, mm-hmm. to seems like full-blown relapse into alcoholism of torturing people, because before he even did and luckily he didn't, well, lucky depending on how you feel about Quinn, mm-hmm. but he didn't kill Quinn, but he did like completely torture and kill that pallet guy that command put him onto in that trailer earlier in the season.
Right.
And he didn't know that guy from Adam, and did not, like, he was supposed to be there to kill Command and couldn't help his impulse but to torture this guy because he's addicted to torture. It is going to be interesting to see what they do with that storyline for the rest of the season.
So does it appear that Command has effectively lost his power? Like, he's there's been a coup, effectively, and he's done.
Yeah, it looks like Jake is now the new guy in Command. And that's a very weird thing, because they do a lot to, and I think this is my first Shonda Rhimes show, for the record. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I'm not as versed as other people, but it seems to be her go-to thing, which is you build up these characters as like really vile people that you can hate. And then instead of like right when you think you would just kind of twist the knife, like, oh yeah, fuck this guy, I can't wait for him to die. There's always like a reason that they're so evil, and that reason, whatever it is, opens your heart up a little bit where you're like sympathetic, and now you kind of don't necessarily want the bad thing to happen to him that's going to happen to him. And I feel like that's what happened with Command, because it went from a guy who evil killer of people on a plane, who locked away Olivia's mother, who, you know, just this really mean, negative person that Olivia hated and everybody else hated. Mm-hmm. And you find out, like, well, he's kind of doing it to protect Liv this whole time. So him losing his job actually had a completely different feeling at the end than I wanted it to have. At the beginning, I was like, get him out of there. Like, how do you get rid of this guy, you know, without killing him because it's Liv's dad? And then they get rid of him, and I'm like, well, shit, man. That dude was looking out for everybody.
Right. He was the only, like, the terrorist just won. That was what I was thinking, right? Yep. There you go. Liv's dad is gone, and the terrorist won. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, and he had just given he had given so many great speeches this season too. Like, what a great addition to the cast to just come in there and blow it away, because that same episode that he lost his job, it was so weird to say, he had just called Fitz boy about 3 or 4 times.
That was awesome. He went out. This is the president of the United States, and you just, like, you don't get to talk to the president that way. I'm sorry. I don't care. Like, you may or may not like the president, but you don't speak to him like that. And he just read him the Riot Act like 3 different times.
It was amazing, because Fitz tried to psychologically manipulate him. And we're in a room where Rowan Pope is tied up. Mm-hmm. His shoes and jacket have been taken. You
he
know,
has no power.
No power at all. And then, Fitz gives him the, not only am I the president, but I'm fucking your daughter. And
that was weird. I didn't think so Fitz weird. Was going to go there. That was totally weird. I'm like, really, Fitz? Is that what you want to lead with?
Right. I'm assuming that it was, you know, some sort of psychological ploy. I mean, I'm hoping that's not how
it was.
Really
a
feels.
Huge pile of fail is what it was.
It really was, because in addition to the fact that it didn't work. Like, he then got it turned on him. So it's like, not only did I know that, but you're not good enough for my daughter, and uh-huh. you're a boy, and you're immature, and I know everything about you. And the second I get out of this chair, I'm back in control. It was amazing.
Right. Do not ever think for 1 second that I'm going to leave here. I'm going to build Skynet. Because you know Joe Morton, at some point in Scandal, he's gonna build Skynet, and then the Terminator's gonna come, and they're gonna link these two things together. Because as soon as I saw Liv's dad, I was like, "That's the dude who made the Terminator." Skynet is gonna happen.
It is amazing too. Made the Terminator with a part he found from a Terminator that was sent back in the past. Which you guys do the math on that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Joe Morton, he chewed up the screen. And then when they brought in, like, Liv's mom.
Yes.
I was like, news radio? Really?
I know her from Miami CSI, but yes, I carry a meaning.
Okay, I mean, maybe I'm, I don't know how old you are, but maybe I'm older. But Candy Alexander was, like, the hottie on news radio. Mm-hmm. back in the day. Like, how long ago was that? Let me try to find you a picture of that. This was in, man, Candy Alexander. She was the,
Well, the thing is with CSI Miami, also, yeah. also a very comical show. And she, like, she would also chew up the screen on that too. And I felt, as soon as I saw her, I was like, oh, that's such good casting. Like, they're not casting her not to use her later. And she, I think coming up in this second half, she's going to be hamming it up.
See, that's exactly right. Because we haven't seen her in a while, and we're all kind of thinking, huh, okay, interesting choice. I mean, they pick someone out there, you know, who hasn't maybe been on TV in a while. She hasn't been on since CSI, but she's been around for 20 years. I mean, 1995 was news radio. Why have a talented actress and then have a throwaway role?
Yeah.
And then you're clear, oh, this is not a throwaway role. This is not a cameo.
Right.
She's here to mess with people.
Yeah.
And it made that very, very clear at the end of the last episode where it's like, I'll be seeing you soon. Mm-hmm. That means next season on Homeland.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, everyone's looking for her. She's, you know, she's persona non grata, public enemy number one. Right. And she stayed in the country somehow.
Yeah, like, I don't know what that was about. She's like down the street.
Right.
Like, she got, oh yes, we lost her in Tibet. She's in Bhutan.
Yeah.
And then she's like on a payphone in Brooklyn. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, I have.
How did she get back in?
I have no idea how that happened, where he just like pan out from the payphone. I'm like, that looks like Washington. So,
yeah.
And especially when they were like, she killed the, you know, she killed the people on the plane when she landed in Brazil or something. I'm like, what? Like, how's, but you know, I'm sure they'll tell us how that worked out at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But, apparently she kills motherfuckers easily, after all these years of captivity.
Yeah, apparently she's a ninja.
Yeah.
So this is the other thing I don't quite understand.
Yeah.
Like, we went through the whole last three or four episodes thinking that, her dad is evil. Mm-hmm. Her mom has been tortured for 20 years and that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly the whole thing in the last 20 minutes gets flipped around. The dad is an American hero.
Yep.
The mom hates everyone, basically.
Except Liv. I think Liv is cool with her.
Yeah, yeah. But still, we don't even know.
Yeah, that's true. She definitely owes all those people.
But it also implies a deeper, like, she may have been deep cover.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, she's a British, Nigerian, Russian, Chinese, some kind of, like, they listed off a half dozen countries that she'd been to, lived in, born in. She came here, married a guy who happened to be the most powerful secret agent in the history of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been planned.
Had
a baby. Baby speaks Chinese and has a fantastic wardrobe.
Okay.
We learned that Olivia speaks Chinese now. They just threw that out there.
Yeah.
You notice that? Like, I feel like no one really commented on
that. No need.
I Googled to check on that.
No
one
need
seems
to use,
be talking about that.
No need to use that before now. There was no situation.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, just like, hey, let's just assume Livia speaks Chinese. She hasn't used it in years, but, you know, she's fluent.
I can't wait for that. I can't wait for that great scene that probably takes 27 takes to do, but with her mom and her speak Chinese next.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's got to happen.
I assume that they basically cobble those things together.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, a couple of words at a time. But still, it's like you want to believe that there's a person out there who is that awesome.
Yes.
And speaks Chinese. And, this, you know, I mean, this is the thing about Olivia, right? And this is, I think, why everyone loves her so much, is that when you put together a character in Dungeons & Dragons,
mm-hmm.
there's a series of characteristics that they roll, and it's like, hey, +2 charisma? Okay, well, you got to have a fatal flaw.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you meet someone who's just too fine to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know there's something wrong with them.
Exactly.
They're full of drama. They're insane. They're
crazy,
stupid. There's whatever. Nobody gets to have all 20s across the intelligence, beauty, charisma.
Right.
So Liv, intelligent, gorgeous, successful, fashionable, speaks 20 languages.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the pro side. Mom's an international terrorist.
Yeah.
Fake the presidency. You know, like literally the most powerful man on the planet was put there through a series of lies that she orchestrated, and now she's taken the most notorious terrorist in the history of the universe and hooked her up with papers.
Yep.
Can you hook me up with these papers as a favor for me?
And her dad is command. And of course, you know, she is the mistress to the president. Everybody gets upset about that, which...
Why is everyone upset about that?
I don't...
Why
you
is
know
that
what's,
the black women conversation? Like, I don't like it. She's a side piece.
That is the worst thing to me because I feel like too many people watch other shows with way more morally duplicitous, like, motherfuckers as the lead.
Right.
And nobody cares. Like,
Cyrus does more in 20 minutes than Liv has done in 4 seasons. And like, I don't know. She's a side piece. I don't respect her.
Yeah, I was talking to...
Cyrus is Satan.
I was talking to my aunt at Thanksgiving. By the way, everyone should be watching Scandal just for that. But I was talking to my aunt at Thanksgiving, and she was like giving her opinion, and she was like, "Yeah, you know, Liv just need to get over that man, da da da." And you know, cause I don't like her. She's too side piece. And I was like, "Right, but you like Cyrus, and that dude is setting up James to fuck another guy." Just to have something over that guy's head. Like,
exactly.
It's not even, like, it's not like a matter of life or death. It's just politically expedient for him.
I could not believe that he did that with his own husband.
That's
just weird.
My aunt was convinced that James wouldn't do it. And I said, no, he's got to do it. Like the betrayal of finding out that's the reason you're in that situation. You almost got to do it, man. I feel bad for James, but, it is weird though with Cyrus and Jane, speaking of that relationship, Cyrus is able to compromise himself out of everything.
I don't know how Cyrus can justify that because he clearly doesn't want to be alone. He ain't that cute.
Mm-hmm.
And where is this little brown baby?
Oh, she went to the room and never came back. That is killing me. Where is that baby? They bring up the baby once in a while. Just show the baby one time, man.
Where's Lupita? Who's watching the child?
Right. They stayed the entire time being like, well, I gave you that baby. Where? Like, neither of you guys is ever home. Who, do you have a nanny?
I don't like the way they're talking about that. This is not a Pokemon card, you know?
Yes.
I mean, I gave you that baby. Where is she?
She is Judy Winslow. Just went up to the room, never saw that beautiful baby again.
Judy Winslow.
Yes, man. It pisses me off every single... It's funny, every time I live tweeted any scene with those two guys talking, I'm always like, where the fuck is the baby, though? Just pull the baby out, just once. No one has to feed the baby. The baby never cries. Like, people argue in a house next door to the baby all the time. Nobody says anything. Anyway. But yeah, they're always able to compromise, man. I mean, he always gives James something that he wants. And even in this latest case, man, he gave him like a job where what was it, like correspondent or something, just something stupid where you're just like, really? He set you up to cheat on him? Like,
yeah,
crazy, man. I don't understand that relationship.
That's so funny that you referenced Judy Winslow, because I was thinking that like when the baby comes back, you know, it's going to be another baby. Like, it's going to be like an Aunt Viv switch and no one's going to notice.
A light skinned baby.
You and me are be like, that's a light skinned baby. Who is that baby?
Right.
It's gonna be Swiss, that's different Aunt Viv. They just pulled out on us.
It's gonna be like 5 years old talking Chinese. Like, you guys are fooling something here.
I wonder if Liv will raise that baby somehow, if she's gonna end up with that baby.
Oh, that would be cool.
She's gonna be pregnant all next season, you know.
Yeah. They actually had to cut some episodes out of the season because she's pregnant in real life. But hopefully that means we're skipping past it. I wonder if that means that it's Fitz's baby on the if they're going to write in Fitz and her having a baby or something on the show, because last time we saw them, he was chopping down those cakes in that house that he bought for them. Mm-hmm. By the way,
in Vermont, could not believe that he bought that house in Vermont. That was crazy.
He really
did. And she's like, oh, yeah, well, don't sell it yet. You know that everybody else was just like, oh, hell no.
Oh, my timeline was so mad. You know what's funny, though? Fitz missed his calling as a realtor. He sold the shit out of that house. I wanted to buy that house by the time he
that was. That was exactly what he was. Totally a realtor. He's like, these are some lovely beams that were made out of this oak. Yes, he owned that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where is this on his schedule? Like, how are you going to find... You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that Obama has got poops scheduled.
Right.
That's how tight his schedule is. How are you going to find 2 hours to jet off to Vermont on taxpayer dollars to tour your mistress's house?
Yes.
On whose checkbook was this house purchased?
Yeah, don't let the American people find out about this. Man, they don't even like when they take trips to, like, you know, like for vacation. You met other houses for mistresses? That's
Hey, what about, we should talk about Melly and the weird relationship that Melly has with the dad.
Oh, yeah, that's actually coming up next, man. But before we say that, I just wanted to say about that, that whole scene with the house, too. Mm-hmm. In that scene, she tells him he can do whatever he wants to her father. So I was like, I actually was, kind of glad that, they didn't kill the father off, because I was nervous that he was going to kill the fucking father, man. I was like, the dick can't be that good. I'm sorry. You can't be killing my daddy, over this. You know, I'm glad that this shit worked out, man, because, Fitz has shown the propensity to kill a motherfucker if need be. so I'm glad that worked out. Yes. Yeah. Speaking of, Melly, another character that, Shonda just makes you hate, and then just turns it around. We just like, but look what happened to her. I thought this is the most controversial episode of the season, probably of the series for me, because there's a sexual assault in this one, between the father of Fitz, Daddy Fitz, and, Melly, who, at the time, you know, her and Fitz are trying to conceive a child. So now it puts a lot of, paternity questions on, you know, into play, cause they do have a couple of older kids that they never show. But, yeah, I thought that was a really, really weird choice. What'd you think about, you know, that, I guess that whole episode?
I'm finding that these, just as I think I could not get more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I get more uncomfortable. Like, really? I mean, first there is a very uncomfortable, you know, I mean, she was imposed upon in the worst way by his dad.
Right.
And then owned that as a leverage point.
Yes.
Then you've got VP Sally, who's gone completely insane. And you've got teeth getting pulled out. You've got blood splatter. And she's justifying this on the Bible.
Yeah.
And the part that I understand is that the presidential organizers, like whoever the handlers are, the puppet master guy who's like VP Sally's helper, is like, when you kill someone, you call me. Don't call the police. You call me.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? You're going to still own her? You don't want to, like, let her go?
Yeah. Doesn't this seem like a fireable offense? Like
yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't want to be your friend anymore.
Yeah.
You just killed your husband, you know?
I feel like
we can still work with this.
I feel like the presidency chances for you are over now.
Yeah, no, they're not. They're like, no, you know, this has happened before.
Right.
You know, if I had a nickel for every time someone killed their, you know, and a vice president killed their gay husband, then, you
yeah.
know.
He's not mad she killed him. He's mad
he's
let
Cyrus
get the job.
First.
Yeah, it's like, how you going to let Cyrus get my job? Come on, man. You don't call. That's like calling Papa John's. I work at Pizza Hut. Come on, man. but yeah, I thought that was a very intense, you know, very intense scene or whatever. All right, man, I'm trying to think, is there anything else we missed out on, man? Melly,
what do you think is gonna happen next season?
That was what I was gonna say. I'm thinking Mama Pope is now out the box, right? She's running around causing havoc, and I think she's gonna be the bad guy, and whoever this dude is that, is going to be after Harrison that got into the country, because Harrison's been scared all season, like, oh, this dude got a passport, don't give him a passport, and somehow some mystery guy is in the country looking for Harrison now, who has a vendetta. I feel like maybe those two hook up to be the villains for the second half, and then we find out a really sympathetic reason why Mama Pope has needed to do all this
shit.
Do
you think Mama Pope has something to do with the guy that wants to kill Harrison?
I think so. They got to hook up somehow, right? I mean,
because they keep bringing this up. They keep saying this dude's coming to the state. It was like, what's his name? Ahmad Rashad, something like that.
Yeah. My main man. Yeah, Ahmad Rashad is going to be there.
Somebody who was married to Felicia Rashad. I'm not sure, but somehow he made it back into the country and wants to kill Harrison.
Yeah. So
it's all going to be connected. But why? Well, I want to know, why does Mama Pope hate America or whatever? Like, what is she mad about?
she has to have something, right? Because she's really competent. She's some type of super ninja. She bit her own wrist out and then still managed to stab a doctor in the neck and escape. So we know certified badass, but knowing Shonda Rhimes, there's always some reason that makes you go, I guess she had to do that, right? So I'm looking forward to whatever the reason is Mama Pope is evil.
So. Right. That's exactly right. I want to know why she's evil. And if it's, is she insane? Because if she's evil, she went from being like drugged for the last 20 years in hospital to getting her ninja skills back. It's almost like, again, a Terminator reference. Remember when we find Sarah Connor mm-hmm. in the hospital? What's she doing? She's doing pull-ups.
Pull-ups.
Got to stay frosty. Mm-hmm. Got to stay tight. Because you never know when you might need to be a ninja.
She knows it's coming. And
right. She knows it's coming, so I'm preparing for the revolution.
Also, man, another great scene, and I promise I'll close out with this. I love that she had not seen her mama for 20-something years.
Mm-hmm.
Mom shows up within 5 minutes. Is like, where are the kids and the husband? Like, just, I'm, ladies, isn't that the way? Every fucking time, man. Just completely. Oh, you're
that's
accomplished.
What it is? Like, oh, that's fine. Oh yeah, you got the president. To, where's my baby? Where's my grandbaby?
I don't see no babies in these pictures.
That's exactly what she did. That's but, so funny.
Thank you so much, Scott, man. We'll have to have you back, man, when the season is over, man. We'll probably just talk straight scandal that time.
Dude, if Ratchet and the Geek's on hiatus, I need an outlet.
All right. We'll do that.
I will come on and be the friend of the black guy who tips.
Yeah, too many people get very upset with me because I watch Scandal. My wife does it. And they're like, why don't you talk about Scandal? So now everybody can feel, everybody, it happened. You're welcome.
We'll talk about, hey, this may be the first time two men
yeah.
talked about Scandal publicly without shame. We own it.
Yeah. Now you have to pay to hear this, so it's not like everyone will hear it, but hey, I'm not ashamed.
Nothing yeah, wrong with that.
Make sure you guys check it out. Also go to Hanselman.com, man, or just put Scott into Google and look at the by now, you know what, it's probably the second result because Scott probably was like, what, I moved to third and did some programming shit and back to two. But make sure you guys look him up, man. S. Hanselman on Twitter. All the links will be in the show notes. And you know, like I said, subscribe to Ratchet and the Geek, Hansel Minutes, This Developer's Life. Check them out, man. I'm not really a developer and stuff, but I find Scott to be interesting no matter how shitty he says his show is. So make sure you guys do all that stuff. We'll be back soon with another Medium Talk on the Blackout Tips Premium Network. Peace.